The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Messages there. Now, very relevant to my next guest, and I'm delighted to welcome Professor Richie Porter. He's in the School of Biochemistry and Immunology, expert in muscle biochemistry. Full disclosure, he's a good mate of mine. Richie, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Luke. Thanks very much indeed.
Great to have you here. Well, actually, Richie, we start with GLP-1 anyway, because you work on diabetes, of course, is one of your big areas. This GLP-1 business, I don't know whether you were tuning in earlier, but it's for sale now in beauty salons and stuff like that. But it's a very important medicine, isn't it, for people with diabetes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for diabetics, it's a game changer. It resets your whole metabolism. So apart from lowering glucose, squeezing out more insulin, it just seems to stabilize your blood glucose system for very long periods of time. So it's very positive benefits, not just for diabetes, but for cancer, etc. So
it's really important, isn't it? Now, your expertise, of course, you're here this morning to talk to us about muscle biochemistry, and I couldn't resist asking you to join us, given your expertise in that area and the inevitable Olympics. And what I really want to talk to you about is the improvements over the past 100 years in athletes in their muscles and all that kind of thing. So, as a biochemist, Richie, what's been going on with athletes over the past 40, 50 years or so?
Well, I suppose if I could just take you back a step, I mean, the basic requirements and the basic sort of areas of change that have happened have been just understanding your own genetics, innovations in sports technology and the technology of sports science, and also your mentality. So they're the sort of main areas that determine whether an athlete's going to be an elite athlete or not. So all, you know, athletes have to be obsessive, driven, determined and focused and have a will to win. So that's the mentality element. And then there's other areas under mentality that can be enhance an elite athlete's performance. When it comes to comparing old records with new records, there's an element of muscle development, but also there's an area of sports technology. So, for instance, like Jesse Owens back in 1936 ran the 100 metres in 10.2 seconds. Usain Bolt's world record for the 100 metres is 9.58 seconds. So if you were to compare that, the distance between them, let's say, it's about a 10.5 metre gap that Jesse Owens would be behind Usain Bolt. So, but of that 10.5 metre gap, what is due to sports technology and what's due to difference in training maybe that Usain has versus Jesse? So definitely technology has as a factor, because the running shoes that Usain would have would be much more ergodynamic. The track that Jesse Owens ran on was a Cinders track, so it's less, you know, the more dissipated energy with every step he took. But also he had to use a trowel to make his own blocks on the track. Whereas,
it seems ridiculous, doesn't it? A little trowel to dig out stuff. Yeah, that was what they did in those days, wasn't it?
Exactly. And I suppose you could say what they've done is virtually looked at the gait of Jesse and corrected for Cinders and corrected for the blocks. And he wouldn't be 10.5 metres behind Usain. He'd probably be about 5 metres behind Usain. So that's the sort of difference we're talking about between 1936, let's say, and recent times in sprinting.
Right.
When it comes to things like marathons, so, you know, the winner of the marathon in 1904, Thomas Hicks, did it in 3 hours, 28 minutes. Whereas Kelvin Kiptum, who has the world record for, sadly he's passed away, but he's the world record for the marathon, is 2 hours and 35 seconds. So that's an hour and a half difference.
Huge.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, I guess it's more about the physiology and understanding it that will explain the difference there.
Right. Now, that's got comparison to Bolt versus Owen. Let's look at that again for a second. Is Bolt's muscles, are his different to Owen's muscles?
Well, I would say probably not. I mean, we're all born with a variety of muscle and the propensity for one type or the other. So you have slow twitch muscle, which is oxidative, so it's more endurance muscle. And you have fast twitch, which is for speed, a more anaerobic muscle. And then we have a muscle fiber that's in between the two. So we're all born with different, we're all born with all these muscles and different proportions of it within our given muscles. So I don't know whether Jesse Owens and Usain Bolt have the same muscle fiber similarity, and they might well do. Let's just say they do. But I guess what's the difference then? The difference then is that, you know, Jesse Owens did several sports. He didn't focus on one. Jesse Owens probably had limited training time. A coach that, you know, had was using trial and error, maybe limited knowledge. Whereas Usain Bolt has a whole entourage with him.
Yeah, around him,
around him. So he has, you know, these sports scientists. Sports science is the big game changer, really, for modern athletes. And then you would have, you know, physios for when he gets injured. You'd have monitoring all the time. It's just, you know, so the modern athlete has scientists around him who can tailor the training, tailor the exercise to the sport that they want. And that's what I am.
That has a big effect, I guess. Yeah, now, of course, you and I have discussed this before. Is it nature or nurture, right? Because obviously...
Yes, exactly.
And what strikes me as well is there's a big... And back in Jesse Owens' day, there were less people in athletics, weren't there? I mean, there's a massive pool of people now. And then there must be an element of coaches saying, oh, that person looks... They've got the right physiology or the right constitution, and if we just train them in certain ways. So the fact that there's more, it's less elite, isn't it, really? There's more and more access to
You are totally right there. I mean, if you go back to those times, coaches, if they had limited knowledge, they were, with trial and error, they had their own notions about way things should work. They might be lucky to get a good athlete. And they're always looking for sort of average size humans, not too small, not too tall. But like nowadays, it's realized, and it's a sort of self-sorting thing that, you know, if you look at the profile of athletes, even in this Olympics, like there's so many 7-foot basketball players, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gymnasts have gone from in the 50s, sort of an average height of 5 foot, female gymnasts from 5'3" to 5'1" now. Swimmers, you look at swimmers, they've quite big torsos and modest sized legs, whereas long distance runners have very long legs.
Yeah.
So, you're right. Like as a first assessment of, oh my God, this is an athlete, but what sports best suits them? Anatomical measurements and analysis would be the first thing you'd do.
Yeah.
But then, as a sports scientist, the physiological analysis would be the next thing you do. Like you don't know whether you have lots of fast twitch muscle or slow twitch, but you know the physiological assessments that can be done will tell you that.
Right.
And there's a lot of sort of biochemical and physiological parameters they can measure. And you inherit, obviously, like your VO max, which would be, you know, your maximum capacity to respire, would be the size of your engine. And that's probably 60% determined by your genes.
Right.
But you can, you know, enhance that through training. But you need to know what the starting point is.
Of course,
someone with slow twitch muscle would augment their faster than somebody with fast twitch muscle.
Isn't it great, Richie, on a Saturday morning you're using the word VO max on Irish radio and we're talking about fast and slow twitch muscles, but it does make a serious point in that it is a real science, isn't it? Let's face it. I mean, and
in fact,
and your own work, I must ask about your own work, because obviously I'm familiar with it, but the speed gene in horses. Tell our listeners about that study that you did.
Well, I was lucky enough to collaborate with Emmeline Hill, who's a geneticist out in UCD Vet School, and she'd identified a, what would you call it, a mild change in a gene that correlated with horse performance, specifically short distance. So, like humans, certain horses are better over shorter distance, they're sprinters, and certain are better over longer distance, they're endurance horses. They're like the Mo Farah versus the Usain Bolt of the horse world. And she's an expert in thoroughbred horse genetics. And she identified this gene change or this modification in the gene. But it wasn't quite clear how it manifested itself in the animal, in the muscle. And we were lucky enough to collaborate with her. And we found that, yes, in the sprinting horses, they produce less myostatin compared to the endurance horses. Now, what the hell is myostatin? I suppose the clue is sort of in the name. Myo is muscle and statin is stop growing. So our muscles ironically produce a hormone that binds to our muscles to say, stop growing now. And that is myostatin. And the sprinters, the sprint horses, produce less of that. And we figured out exactly where that mutation was to cause less of it to be expressed, and therefore they had bulkier muscle than were sprinters.
Right.
So maybe Usain Bolt has...
Well, I'm going to ask you, is
Mo Farah.
any evidence in humans? But it must be similar, because obviously our muscles are pretty similar, aren't we, between different species. Yeah. So any evidence that humans have myostatin variability?
There's no doubt that there's... Well, let's put it this way. There are... certain individuals born without myostatin, and they're sort of muscle-bound looking individuals, but that's an extreme case. Most traits that are good for sport would be, you know, require many gene differences, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's very rare to find one that has such a dramatic effect.
Right, yeah.
There is one, a non-myostatin one, but there's a famous skier called Eero Montrajanta, who was a Finnish skier who competed back in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
And he had, unbeknownst to himself, and it was only discovered many years later, you know, this endurance ability. He was a cross-country skier, and it was due to the fact that he had a mutation in the EPO receptor. So EPO is erythropoietin, and it binds to the EPO receptor. And his receptor was shorter, but it was much more efficient. So he was producing many more red blood cells than his competitors, unbeknownst to himself. And that's why he was so successful.
Right. Yeah.
So you do the odd time find individual genes that are mutated in individuals that give them a huge advantage. But generally speaking, it requires many genes to be aligned, as it were, for you to be a great athlete.
Right. And when you think about doping for a minute, I know it's controversial to talk about, but is the new doping, now it's not happening obviously, but you could make a human, couldn't you, strangely enough, with a certain variant in a certain gene, and then they might go on to win the race? Or is that a bit too much science fiction at the moment, do you think?
Well, I mean, there is talk about it because, you know, in the lab you can manipulate genes and quite easily, but could you do it in a human? I mean, they've done it in animals, they've made a myostatin knockout beagle dog, you know,
right,
with a muscle band.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is it's definitely possible, but hopefully it won't happen.
It'd be crazy, crazy thing to do,
But going back to, like, I'm sure, like, Usain Bolt will have children that are probably great sprinters, and I'm sure that Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi will have children that are great tennis players. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the natural passing down of genes, you know, we will see improvements in speed, improvements in all sports, really.
And I would guess you're watching the Olympics, I presume, given that
I love the Olympics.
I know you're a huge sports fan.
What
stood out for you now if the swimmers? Do you love them? Is they're spectacular. Leon Marchand seems to be the key swimmer.
He's incredible.
What's he got? Do you think? Is it his physique? Partly, it must be his physique, but there's probably more going on.
Again, if you look at his physique, I don't want to be just putting it down this, but, like, he's a very long torso,
yeah,
and therefore a huge amount of musculature that can go onto that. And then clearly, like, when you look at him and, like, Adam Peaty, they have huge pectoral muscles. If you're a butterfly swimmer, you're going to have huge lateral dorsi muscles.
Right.
So clearly his training has developed the muscles that are required for the strokes that he does. And it was so unusual for him to be doing butterfly and breaststroke. You know, I mean, that's quite unusual. But the other thing, of course, he has is Michael Phelps' coach, who's an expert in honing swimmers. But no, he has the genetics. But also, you can see the mentality in him. Like, look at the way he even just focuses on what he has to do.
Yeah, his commitment.
The mental strength he has is amazing, as well as that drive, and also to be able to control, to know your race and how you should do the race, because, like, he won that last race only in the last 25 meters. Like, he wasn't panicked by seeing somebody ahead of him. He stuck to his process. He stuck to the plan that the coach said he should do, that he knew he should do.
Right. Right.
So mental strength and being aware of what you can do is very important.
It sounds like a joy to watch from your point of view anyway. And you're watching for,
I love it.
You're looking at his pecs. So you're looking at his pecs and his glutes and all these things as well. But the level of commitment and drive and ambition and all that, and then the performance
is spectacular. I love the way the manifestation of their endeavors, the excitement of the competition.
Yeah, isn't it brilliant?
And again, as you just said, like superstars born like him, like DuPont, you know, the rugby player. They transform a sport and they bring new people into sport when they see people like this. And even I'm also like so impressed by the some more even human interest stories of, let me just give an example. You know, Nada Hafaz, the defending lady from Egypt, who,
right.
you know, 7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
Think of what's happening in her physiology being 7 months pregnant. Yet she was still able to compete. She won one or two matches.
Guys, you're watching fencing as well, Richie. There's no sport that is outside your interest.
My favourite sport is surfing. A, because it's happening in Haiti.
Yeah, surfing.
Tahiti, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
And it's just wondrous. And I unfortunately didn't make the breakdancing team for Ireland, but I'll be watching that as well.
Hopefully, yes. Well, we can't. The joy of sport, anyway. And then we have the biochemistry. The biochemistry. You're looking at this through different lenses, but the biochemistry
do,
of sport
I do,
as well.
I do. Very much so, yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, Richie, thanks ever so much for joining me. That was a great chat that we had. That's Richie Porter, Associate Professor in the School of Biochemistry and Immunology, expert in muscle bio.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.